and welcome back to the Skills Provision Podcast. On today's call, there's myself, Francesca.
I'm Pete.
And actually, we've got a new addition joining us today, which you may well hear in the background, new little puppy Willow. I'm not going to ask her to say hello because we're hoping she'll stay asleep. On today's episode, we're discussing a bit about skills provision in the global employment market. I just want to take this moment to remind our listeners out there, if you are a new listener and you're viewing this or listening on any sort of platforms, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. If you can, like it, share it with colleagues, friends, anyone you think could be interested. Equally, if you are an employer and you're looking for recruitment support, don't hesitate to contact us today. We can support many employers globally with various different industries, skill sets, types of workers, be that CEOs down to shop floor. To find out more, you can view our website. Please do check out our support pages as they detail thoroughly a bit about our processes and how we can support you. We like to make sure that we're transparent with employers, ensuring they understand where their value for money is coming from. Equally, if you're a job seeker and you're looking for opportunities, please do view our job board where you'll find all of our vacancies. We ask you then to create a profile, of which we'll come on to that more on that later, register for any opportunities and make your application known. Perfect. We are going to crack on with today's episode. So as I said, skills provision and the global employment market. Now, Pete, feel free to interject at any point. My maths and things may be off slightly, but a little bit about, and I'm going to speak about it from where we are from a job seeker perspective, because dealing with the recruitment side heavily, it's something that I'm seeing obviously a lot to do with. Currently, now we have amalgamated candidate profiles along with our new user registrations, and feel free to interject at any point, Pete. There are about 65,000 workers registered on our database. And these 65,000 workers come from all over the globe. So we've got candidates from most countries, I would say, Pete, wouldn't you agree?
Certainly, yes, definitely.
Looking for opportunities, be that in their home countries, but a lot of workers are looking to that international opportunity and that next career step that they can take to better further develop themselves and equally to just look for new opportunities. On the flip side, we support employers across the globe with various different skill sets and industry requirements. So be that currently, for example, we're looking for design managers for roles in Dubai. But at the same time, we're looking for a general manager for a position in Ghana. So we've got various different opportunities. Some are open, unfortunately, due to restrictions. And this is something we'll come on to a bit later. Not every opportunity does come with that benefit of being able to offer visa sponsorship or a work permit. So unfortunately, not every opportunity is open to candidates beyond the local or national market. Would you like to interject, Pete, about a bit more about any stats or data, if you've got anything else with regards to us in the global employment market?
Not at this time, no.
No? Okay. So countries currently covered. Now, this is as of today's date, and I'm hoping I can count correctly, Pete. 48 countries are currently on the map?
Yeah, that's correct.
And do you want to explain a little bit about the map and its functionality and the purpose of it?
Yeah, we'll get on to that. First of all, I'd just like to touch on the subject of skills provision and the global employment market, where we are, so more of a generic snapshot of where we're at, how we got there, where we're going. So first of all, we're well on our way to becoming a massive global employment network. And the market needs this, as we can all see, and you'll agree with this, Francesca. LinkedIn is and has been for a long time, is simply turning into a spam fest of sellers. And very little, probably apart from contractual work, which does well. I know my own son gets a lot of work from that side of things in the oil and gas, is as an employment network, it's not it's not performing well and the market needs something else.
Yeah, Yeah, what I would say from an observational point of view is I think there's been a real trend from where its purpose was originally of being more geared towards professional employment, all of those sort of things, to naturally gravitating towards the other social media platforms, if you will, of being a more one size fits all for everything and people sharing other things, of which there's nothing wrong with that, but it can make the employment aspect of it become second fiddle to everything else.
Yeah, and that can become a consequence of popularity and opening the systems up to the general public. So it becomes more of a social network, and the social network then sort of steers itself. And then those that own and run the likes of LinkedIn, Microsoft, find it very difficult to change direction and to add elements into it. They're more driven by their customer base. We won't be doing that. We won't be having mass discussion, although looking to introduce discussion groups. Everything will be monitored and everything will be professional, and there'll be dividing lines between employers and job seekers, and it will not be turning into, it hasn't, and nor will it, into more of a spam fest where people probably think by having 500 profiles all saying the same thing that they've got better opportunity. Every single thing that goes onto the site is validated, and it's not easy to pass validation. So this 65,000, which is a fair accurate number of where we're at regarding profiles, which is, and not everyone completes a front profile or has completed a profile in the past, is probably, in comparison terms, the equivalent of 1 million on CV Library, because one, they're just collation of old CVs. We have 65,000 database strong of international people that are actually looking for employment, and which makes it a very powerful database. So moving on, internationally, we're putting businesses on the map. Now, this shouldn't be as difficult as what it is, but with the way online works and having to work within specific boundaries makes it fairly difficult and long-winded. One of the reasons why we've not had a podcast for a while is because we've been busy working in these areas. We have a strong commitment to the delivery of cost-effective or free employment solutions, because we don't rely on digital adverts as a form of advertising. We can pass on value, monetary value, to our customers. A very important element to note. I was doing some research yesterday on South America market, where recruitment agencies were charging 25% to 30% the annual salary. A lot of this is happening because people are heavily weighted in on digital ads. The cost of that is continually spiraling upwards, which means they need to make their own margins, and everything falls back to the customer, the client, paying more once you become reliant on agencies to get your manpower. It becomes hard to, a bit like digital ads, it becomes hard to get out of that game. So when the prices start going up, you either don't have the manpower or you pay the prices. So it's almost like there's blackmail type games being played in all facets of employment. We don't play those games. We like to pass on, we do pass on value to all our customers, regardless of the sector they operate in. We're continually seeing diverse inquiries coming in from many regions. Naturally, COVID, and you probably expand on this, Francesca, naturally COVID and the hiring spike that followed that, and then retrospectively, visa changes and restrictions
have all played a
part in this peaks and troughs that we've seen, and all the majors have reported. You know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, it was fantastic. Everything's great. Europe's a fantastic hotbed of placements and employment, and now it's no one's looking to move. So everything's cyclical. You just got to play these games out.
Yeah, may I interject there?
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah, so 100%. The post-COVID boom, anyone who's in recruitment knows that there was this massive increase because the world was at a standstill for a period of time. Obviously, many people across many countries lost their jobs. And so then there was this, when things started increasing, this change, this sudden openness, and also I think the increase of remote work opportunities because people weren't sure what was going to happen and other things like that. And obviously we're now seeing the counteraction of that now with most recently Amazon announcing the return to office for many of its workers. Starbucks is obviously the well-known one in terms of the office staff returning to work, with the CEO doing that short commute of a few hundred miles by a plane or helicopter or however he was getting there. Especially obviously on the UK side, the visa changes, there was the positive impact of the visa changes post-Brexit, which did allow for companies that were struggling to find people and had heavily relied on, say, the European workforce pre-Brexit to bring people in. Obviously, those changes now, the increase in the salary from the minimum threshold of 26,200 to the 38,700 has wiped out a lot of opportunities or for a lot of companies that were relying on this. On a personal opinion, I think the justification for the 38,700, and this is just my feeling, I'm not quite sure I think it was fair. I do think, unfortunately, there has been some abuse of the use of it and going down the route of this route where there possibly is the talent within the UK, but we will see things about skill shortages on a daily, weekly basis. That there's got to be some truth in it. And by now reducing this, it does mean that some businesses, and it's in some ways it's still too early to tell because these changes only took effect in April, it'll be further down the line than we see what the impact of these are. Obviously, the intention is to increase higher skill level people coming in. But I think by a byproduct of doing the way that they did it, it sort of felt like they didn't sell themselves very well, the UK, in terms of being an attractive option for people on the international front. And the UK is not the only country that are experiencing skill shortages. So people are going to go where the opportunities are. And the UK is not the only one looking and reviewing their immigration options. Again, a personal opinion of mine is that I think it would be great if there was no restriction on where someone came from. Obviously, reality that's not gonna happen, but it, again, similar to conversations we have on a daily basis, Pete, is that if there was a clear process to follow, and of which there used to be much more, and I'll take the UK as an example of the justification for a company, the reason they are looking outside is they cannot find this, so they have to prove it, then they can use the outside option. I think somewhat the salary or the threshold should be somewhat irrelevant, providing whatever is being paid is going to be sufficient for the well-being of that candidate and they can actually live. So not just paying minimum wage when they're having to relocate, pay all these other fees. But it's also these people that are coming over, and there will be exceptions for anyone who goes anywhere in any country. You'll get a few bad apples that don't then either follow through with their work, or some people will skip out and various different things. But all of these people generally are coming over for the betterment of themselves, the betterment of their lives, their careers, and by taking that opportunity away, it feels wrong. And I think if there was the option that, I think, again, it comes down to the monitoring of that these people were contributing to society, they're paying all these costs, and then they're still also paying towards national insurance and tax and other things like that. So it's not like they're getting a free pass when they're here. I don't know. It's, again, that's a topic for another day, maybe. But just echoing what you were saying about the challenges, the peaks and troughs, and recruitment is always cyclical. It is. It really is. And it's great when it's going well. It's not obviously frustrating when it's not, but you just have to keep going and hope. And by following processes and processes that work, things should always come back around.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with all of that, but certainly some of it. The positive part for skills provision is the fact that we operate internationally. So whilst you have cyclical downturns in some areas, then in others you see an uplift, which mm-hmm. could be in Asia, South America. And the policies that they have, whilst appearing to be more restrictive in South America, are actually more conducive to fairness and corporate expansion than what we see in the Western Hemisphere. So it's, they have, all workers have to have some form of visa, temporary, short term, permanent. They are not just get, so it will be dependent on the areas that people are looking to take employment into. So if, is there an opportunity? What are the numbers? If there are 500,000 people unemployed in the construction industry, then the government's not going to allow many foreign skilled workers coming in into those areas. But where there's shortages, there most certainly are. And also they make it known that they won't let employers hire more than 20% of foreign labour within their company. Well, that's quite a high number. And these are good practices to have, policies that you can consider, like the in the West, the very low levels, areas, they can be at 80-90% of foreign workers. This is the areas that's causing the disjointed element to the whole of this sector. And you can't generalize. That's the problem. People trying to generalize with food production, IT, skilled engineer, high skilled engineers. You can't. They're all different and they've all got their own specific challenges. Just like to move into Europe. Europe's a great example on the demand of international skilled workers. Here, countries within the Union have the luxury of employing workers from within the bloc. However, we still see massive shortages. We still generate a lot of inquiries from European companies, which is unusual. But it shows on the grand scale how demographic changes, the introduction of IT and information technology, automation, AI, etc., the widespread scrapping of apprenticeship schemes, and poor employment treatment and pay have all led to what we see today, which is companies in Estonia, for example, got a thriving expat community, find it very difficult to find foreign skilled labour to fill good positions throughout the whole of Europe. And then you start to understand, and then you see the similar kind of thing in Germany. So it's not where the workers have migrated to the more popular areas, Germany, Netherlands, Switzerland, Denmark, moving away from traditional poor areas in the east, mm-hmm. the whole of Europe, Spain, Denmark, Italy, Portugal, it's almost like there's a pot of skilled workers, let's say in the artisan trade, the blue collar, mm-hmm. and the pot of workers, this is all workers, is too small on an international scale for the actual positions that are out there, which would give you the thought that the change has to come in terms of cross-training, just training in itself, increased packages. But it's difficult. It's almost like people are adverse to move, so they may take less money, but they want to stay in a certain area. They've lived there all their lives. So there are changes, challenges. Francesca works a lot in the UK, so she naturally talks about that market maybe a little too much because we're covering the whole of the world and the global problems that are out there are vast, as we're seeing.
Exactly. Exactly, and you're totally right, and that it's not just a UK problem, it's a global problem of certain skill sets, and artisan is a good example, trade skills, healthcare is another good one, of where there is only so many people in their first choice pot, should we say, of people that have the right to work in whatever country it is, or equally if you're in the EU, they have the freedom of movement, that when that pot is exhausted, what are the other options that they are A, willing to consider, and B, able to consider due to restrictions that maybe are in place, or costs is another obviously one factor for companies, is what is the cost to them of bringing someone from further afield. It's a universal challenge, it's not an isolated one for one particular country.
Right, so that moves me back to where the original question about the map is. Yes, you're correct. 48 countries listed. It doesn't actually mean we only support 48 countries, but that's the areas that we're currently advertising, because it takes the time to integrate these into the online model that we're targeting visually, factually, by search, online, website means 48 countries in the world, which is growing weekly. The systems we're putting in place within the map element is based on fairly simplistic to verbally explain, but complicated in terms of development and expansion. And that is big box, little box system. To explain that quite simply, is the big box would be Peru, and the little boxes that fit inside the big box are international job board covering Peru, international workers from Peru seeking employment, international workers looking for employment either in South America or Peru. I'll post the job services that are coming soon in Peru, visa support in Peru, copywriting services, recruitment services, directory services, all for the Peruvian market. And this thing of sort of big box, and then the continuation of, which could also be HR-based services. A whole raft of either free, paid services will be generated internationally in a sort of virus-spreading type manner, where we just, as soon as we've got our big boxes in place, and we're probably on for two from stage one of the finishing off of that, and then the small boxes will start to be implemented, and a virus type spreading throughout the entire network. This is just going to continue and grow. Contextually, my team at the moment has enough work probably for a decade, which is frightening. Of an unbelievable, so in terms of the work that we've got in front of us to develop a functional employment network. But that's where we're going. That's where we've committed to this journey of continually developing the network, the services within, but most importantly, providing professional support to employers and job seekers alike. So we are the turn-to organisation for assistance with a CV, assistance with a video presentation. I need 900 workers tomorrow. This kind of thing. We're going to be the global first employment network that is fully functional today, but it's just a matter of spreading, developing and getting bigger. We have no bias or discrimination. Many areas of the world suffer from conflict, sometimes armed conflict, natural hatred. We do not get involved or judge any area. So for example, we provide our services to Russian companies, as well as Ukraine, as well as the areas in the Middle East. There's no bias whatsoever. And nor will there be. Because we're not here to judge. We're judge and jury over anything. We're just here to provide an unbiased professional service. In terms of the challenges and companies that work in a similar area, have made the mistake and continue to make the mistake of producing their content via bots. And all this is doing, which was, it makes everything a lot quicker, simpler, easier, copy and paste, done, bang, get it out there, is the production of meaningless content that doesn't actually have any soul to it, meaning, or it's not even written by people, it's just words. And this is also having an effect on SEO, visibility, and such like, which naturally we're in the game if we want to progress quickly. But then there's a quality element as well to take into account. So that's probably my biggest challenge comes in terms of the balancing act of growing this whole thing at a speed that's derived by quality, not what any individual wants it to be. So there you go. That's where we are with the map. And if you go to the website and look under worldwide, you'll see how the country's covered in green, how we're spreading, how the pages are being produced, quality pages, fantastic AI videos, which Francesca is part of and her team putting together, which is really making a strong difference as well. So it's going well. It's difficult, hard, but everything worthwhile is. And yes, if you keep doing the right things, even the hard things, the right way and constantly, the competition are never going to follow. They're going to fall by the wayside and just want fast. We want fast. We want digital ads. We want to kill ourselves. Because this is what's happening is, companies are making £1 billion, producing £1 billion revenue per year. But they're loss making. That's because they've swallowed themselves in terms of the cost of recruitment, and they can't pass any much more on to the customers, and their own wages are so increased over time. Everything's gone up, every single thing. And once you become loss making on that scale, you're done. There's no coming. How would you ever turn it back? So it's almost like the mistakes are made at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And my team know this, and we make sure we go steadily and clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that leads us on to various different highlights and challenges that we're seeing, and of which, again, feel free to interject at any point. when discussing what we were going to talk about in this podcast, I don't know whether I've taken it in a slightly different direction than the intention, so we'll see, and tell me if you want me to look at it from a different angle. But one of the areas we've kind of already touched on is just the challenge of the markets of where people or companies are willing or able to look at when it comes to trying to find talent to fulfill their needs. Now, obviously, recruitment agencies, the reason that people come to us, so Company A comes to us, is for our reach. And with our network that we've built up over time, that we will have access to certain candidates that maybe they don't. In our case, obviously, we've got access to a lot of candidates. But if they are restricted within a certain pool, and be that they're looking for the perfect candidate or geographically restricted, being honest and transparent is that the results are not necessarily going to be much different. Or if you're coming to market with a below market offer and your competitors are offering significantly more, and I'm not necessarily, and this is something I think, especially in a post-COVID era and even before that, I do think there has been this change from workforce perception or the way the workers are valued. It's not just about the salary. It's about everything else that the company brings, that support, mental health, maybe additional company benefits, physical well-being, the other things that are outside of just that pure salary aspect. But I always see these trends and stuff online of things of like, well, the company, they offer Friday pizza. Well, what good is Friday pizza going to be when they're paying pittance that the person then can't afford to do things? And I also think this misconception of, and where I don't know how I could put a time frame on it, but this misconception that by going for workers from certain countries, regardless of where the company is based, or if the company is based in the Middle East, if the company is based in Europe, of going for workers from certain areas, that they think that they can pay less just because they're coming from a different country, when the work that they're doing is still going to be of the same value. That you can't just suddenly be like, oh well, we're getting this worker from here, therefore we can pay €2, $2, £2 less than what we would pay if we were getting someone local. So I think that is something that we find quite challenging when we're trying to also promote looking outside of just the local market, national market, that where is that option to hire from abroad, is that you can't, your offer has got to be internationally competitive, especially in those skill sets where there is the real shortages, your trade skills, healthcare, I'm sure there are others, but nothing, I can't think right now. Because I would assume, say, for your son, for example, Pete, is that there's probably disparity between maybe what he's earning versus what others are earning, but they're doing sometimes the same job. And also, if people are moving from another country to another, the costs of living, that where someone has come from, I don't know, say they've come from Thailand and they're moving to the US, the standard and cost of living in Thailand is obviously going to be significantly lower, and them thinking that just because they're coming from those places, that therefore you can be paying them less because their perception of what all that money sounds like a lot. But then if they get to the US and the position is in a affluent area or a high cost area, you can't be paying someone lower just because of where they've come from.
Apparently when he worked in shipyard in Singapore, he was on just shy of £600 per day, and the people in there working just as hard, less technical, I guess, they were on 40. It's not for doing the same work, and no amount of cost of living variation can take that one into account. It just doesn't exist. And maybe looking at Asia versus the West for times 3, times 4, times 5, but you know, some could be operating in the times 10 to 20 difference between what he's been paid and what others have. Now he's not. Now, surprisingly, he's on the other side of the coin, where he's now working for a service company, so he's employed direct instead of being a contractor. And he's paid now. He's not been there long, months, but intends to stay there for many years. Where he's paid, his base rate is probably the lowest it's ever been since even when he started after leaving school. But he's paid there's a set rate that he's paid, which he gets regardless if he's working or not. So he's sort of, there's two elements to his pay. There's the working on the rigs or platform refineries, or added to this standby rate or whatever it's called, and produces probably at the end of the year comparable amounts. But he can be on the rig now working and be earning 250, and the people that he's working with are on 450. So it's quite amusing the way it's all turned round. But I think because the contract is the amount of days they get to work per year is a lot less.
Yeah.
That it sort of balances out. And like I said, the cost of living thing, it's almost like what the employer can get away with. Employers are generally the financial biased towards themselves and their companies. And if they can get away with pay, it's almost like they start at the bottom, don't they? You know, let's say that if you paid everyone in this factory £15 an hour, you'd fill it with quality workers. And they'd be like, yeah, but we wouldn't be making hardly any profit. So we'll start at the minimum wage, £11.20, £11.50, just keep going up. We're up, yeah, we've got them. They're no good. They're not good workers, but we've got enough of them. We can now.
Yeah.
They pay the supervisors more now, don't they? So it's like pay the managers and supervisors more, but they pay the workers less, and then it's just like.
It's nothing new. It's been this way for a long time, but it is. I think it's becoming more and more, especially when we're talking more and more, the pool of people is getting smaller and smaller. The level, I think it's people being, and it depends obviously how often someone is hiring. And I think this is the other thing, is that you've got some companies that are constantly hiring, so should have more of an awareness of what is going on. But you've got some companies that maybe they've not had to go to market for a period of time, and they're still thinking that they can offer a rate of 2-3 years ago, and the reality is it's just not there. So that is a challenge that continues, and I don't see it alleviating, but it's something that when we have our discussions with the employers, is that just being transparent about the fact that, okay, based on what you're offering, we can go to market. And what we try to say is that we'll go to market, and generally we know the response within a period of time, and we'll be transparent with the employers and say, look, we don't believe that your offer is going to be now competitive enough in the market. We can see by the level of response, what else can you bring to the table? And like I say, it doesn't necessarily just have to be the salary side of things. It's the other things, and it's factoring in a lot of different aspects. And then on the other side of that is, you've kind of, I suppose, touched on some part of the fact that employers and recruitment agencies alike, or any business generally, one of their main things is obviously to make money. So they're wanting to pay out as little as they can when it comes to any cost or investment into something, be that a piece of equipment or equally a worker. And so when they turn to recruitment agencies, the price aspects and the price differential, and you were talking about, was it Peru you were saying, where they charge, was it 20-30% you were talking about Peru?
Yeah, I think it was 25 to 35 cents.
Yeah, and the aspect of people, employers saying that, well, we're not willing to pay that now, then going for the lowest rate possible. Now, this is a generalization. Obviously, I can't say what every single recruitment agency is like, but just because you're paying less, there's often a reason why you're paying less, is that what you're getting value for money is maybe not there. And that's something that I think is a real highlight from our perspective, is that our protocol, our way of processing an inquiry, is that we'd like to guide towards having a demo demonstration. And Pete's team have been doing a really good work, really good job in terms of honing this experience and getting content out there. So if you're an employer, you can see there's a page on demonstrations which does highlight some of the areas we cover, but it's a 15 to 20, 30 minute, depending on obviously how the conversation goes, explaining exactly where the value is coming from with our service. Because to think it's just, right, we do this, that's it, done. It's, and in some cases that will be what agencies do, but there is a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes, and we want to make sure that employers know exactly what there is. And that's something that I believe we do a really good job of vocalizing and showcasing exactly where it's coming from. And one of the positive byproducts of that is the perception from our clients of the tools that we use when given the opportunity. And don't get me wrong, I understand employers are busy people and it can't always work. So more than happy to tailor things according to what our employer wants. The employer comes first. But when we get given those opportunities to showcase it, generally everyone comes out with a positive feeling. And it may well be that when we get to the price aspect, we can't dictate that. We can't change and say what the company can and can't afford when we give our quotations. But when people see the tools, particularly say like our client zone, everyone says, wow, this is amazing. This is impressive. It shows that it's more than just a, right, here you go, here's a person. I don't know if you've got anything you want to add as far as that goes, Pete.
Yeah. If we go back to my son's situation, and more his network of friends, he obviously had a disjointed lifestyle living as a young boy, moving around Europe quite a lot. Excuse me. But he's settled in an affluent area in the north of England-ish. And there's a group of friends from school. He was out with them. He came back and he was out with them yesterday. And never considered it before, but looking at the work that those young men do, so you've got my son in the oil and gas, there's a school teacher, two people that work in the brand motor vehicle industry, so Audi, BMW, that kind of thing. There's a graduate that's now working in the factory, assistant manager level, someone that's just returned from a year in Australia doing these work holiday visa type schemes, Australia, New Zealand, and one person who's probably quite the fortunate one of the group, whose father owns a sort of, I don't know, builders, merchants type carry on. Now, all of them have got decent jobs. So it's not like 50% are at the low level. Now, you'd say with these, like a few of them went on to university, but not many. 75% of his friends' network didn't. Probably all physically capable and motivated. They meet up and they're playing football somewhere yesterday, and they meet up, have a game of football, go for a meal, chat, all get together, see how everyone's getting on. It's quite nice that they've probably, from being Lewis, they've been friends from 12. My son's 25 now. So, but the whole group as a whole, no one's really struggled to find employment. No one's struggled to find decent employment. Whilst obviously the earnings vary dramatically, which is normal. You know, the people are moving into the housing market. was looking to go back abroad and do some more travelling. It's a good snapshot. So what would be fair to say is that in areas of, this is not a, down here, it's a, say, a fairly affluent area. These areas, there's massive opportunity. I would imagine there's more opportunity than anyone even imagines. But it's probably at the lower level. And as you move into areas where artisan trades people are needed more, say Leeds, for example, are needed more in higher numbers, where it then starts to become, they're just not available and the market needs them from somewhere. So it's an interesting snapshot of what it's actually like on the ground as such. And I'd like to take just a quick moment to throw out one of our, throw out an advertisement and to say to all employers out there, regardless of the sector you operate in or your location, we have the capability, the visibility and the available resources to provide employment support at a cost-effective level. If you're struggling for skilled workers, which is the main area that we operate in, very quickly and efficiently, we can provide the manpower that you need. So on that, back to you, Francesca.
Okay, I've got one more challenge, if you will, that I think is that I'll cover today, because I also don't want it to just be a list of negatives or it seemed like I'm being that way because there are positives, is levels or other challenges that we're seeing. Again, and please don't think that I think I'm reinventing the wheel here, that these challenges are not new, but I think they're becoming more and more prevalent and highlighted, is rounds of interviews and feedback. So from a candidate perspective, the levels and rounds of interviews that are needed for jobs is becoming, in some cases, quite ridiculous. If a candidate has an opportunity to go with Company A versus Company B, Company A is two interviews, they're all organised within a week, and Company B, whilst it may be offering more money, it could be a more well-respected, let's say, an internationally known organisation, if you're going to put them through five levels of interview and it's going to take 2 months to complete that interview, depending on if that person is in a job currently or if they are out of a job, now this can obviously dictate, there are very various variables that can dictate, but what is the need for all of these levels of interviews? Now, obviously, depending on the seniority of a position, we totally understand that some will require further and deeper investigation, but for most positions, we don't personally believe that there should be anything beyond three levels. And it's also this perception from employers of, if you think you found the right candidate, why then continue to do interviews just to do a comparison? Now, if we're talking about that, you say, I don't know, it's a Monday and you think you found the perfect candidate and you've got another interview lined up on the Wednesday. Well, that's a reasonable time frame to wait, have someone wait for a decision. But we're seeing some people where, oh, I've interviewed this person on the 1st of September, for example. Oh, but we've got other interviews lined up for the 28th of September. So we want to wait and see what the other options are. The likelihood is that someone's, and obviously there are variable factors, but the likelihood is that someone's not necessarily going to wait around for that period of time. There needs to be consideration on the about the candidate and their well-being in the process. And also, just think about, from an employer's perspective, the reputation that also puts out into the marketplace. If people can say they've had a good experience through the process, they've been kept informed. If they weren't successful, they get the feedback as to why. Not this ghosting, as everyone is saying, and keeping things moving along in a concise manner that makes sense and is necessary. I think that in itself is one of the biggest challenges that we're seeing on a daily basis. And I don't know, for example, say your son, Pete, well, I don't know how many rounds of interview he had for his last one. Obviously, it's been a little while since I personally have interviewed for a position, so I can't speak from first-hand experience of going through the process. But it's not something that anyone should be put through unnecessarily.
He went through three, I believe. Well, probably only one really counted or mattered, and that was the final one with a senior engineer where he had to verbally, which could take 15, 20, 25 minutes, explain a process, and there was multiple processes to explain as to how he would, say, strip down Christmas tree, I think they call them, some of these things in on the wells, and then test using nitrogen pumps and all this kind of stuff. That was all complicated, you know, elements, and verbally explain. Bear in mind, it wasn't a job that he'd done before, which brings me on to a fascinating subject, which is a perfect candidate a perfect candidate?
100%, and we've talked about this, haven't we?
Probably not in detail, where a perfect candidate on paper, so an actual perfect candidate, has a very strong value in the marketplace, which means their longevity in post, their progression in terms of, a bit like the football player that really is the Messi of the Premier League, Gordon, and a few others like him that are so good that they're hard to keep hold of.
100%.
And in the workplace, if you look at this and think, we don't really want the perfect worker that's so good, so powerful, so experienced, they can do these jobs on their head, because they may be gone in a few months. Whereas like my son, in the area he went into, and his ass hasn't touched the ground since he started, flying out daily from Humberside at the moment to a unmanned rig to do X, Y, and Z, some decommissioning task. And then after that, he's probably going to Southampton for a year or 2 years. So he really hasn't had a moment's break. And that's fantastic for him. And you know, obviously, they're all young, keen. They want the next BMW, the money in the bank and all this kind of stuff, which is all understandable. But it's when he was interviewed, bear in mind, they've got a good idea. They've read the CV. They've done the background checks. There's been phased discussions, what they call interviews, prior to that. The guy that the person at the end of this line, he knew my son was not on paper a strong candidate for this particular role, but with training, development, and because he has the right characteristics and personality, and he could answer the questions in areas where he hadn't had official training. So he could talk through 25 minutes of how he would strip something down and reassemble, test and reassemble. Then, and he very much impressed at that level that he was given the job. Now, because of his, probably just his personality, and he's engaging and keen. He was told something like he might get 180, 60, 80 days work per year. The rest will be on standby. He's hardly had any time off. Days. And even then, that he's getting paid fully for the days he does have off. So it's like this thing of, it's all down to personal qualities. And if you take and I had this myself when I was in the military in an engineering environment where you take the salt of the earth grafters that got the right characteristics and you get them to do something else that's outside their scope of comfort, training, whatever it is, but you explain exactly what they need to do, how they need to do it, then they will do a perfect job. And they will do it time and time and time again, whereas the person that's probably got a bit more ego about them, has done it for 20 years, got a piss-poor attitude, it's... And probably more thinking more about their own personal worth and value in the marketplace. Oh, I can get $5,000 down the road. I'll just wait. I'll wait. And then as soon as that next opportunity arises, I'm gone. Because everyone, or the vast majority, are selfishly biased. This is where, and as you'll understand, Francesca, this is what we're looking at, where the perfect candidate isn't necessarily the perfect candidate, but the difficulty is explaining that to the employers, because they see it as, well, you're just trying to palm us off with someone that's not that suitable.
No, it is a challenge. And I do think there's certain areas where there has to be a bit more alignment, specifically for, say, more senior position. You're obviously going to want someone that has, if they're bringing something into a company that's being new and wanting to be established, then they're going to want someone who can do certain things easily first time, not necessarily learning on the job. But it's 100% that you, for a lot of roles, you want that sort of 80% fit with the 20% to grow. Because also, depending on where someone's coming from, there's a lot that they can have left to learn. And the company that, and the way that one company does something is not necessarily the same way that another company does. And not, and it, to say which way round it is as to who does it better, well, that's down to interpretation, down to every circumstance. But it's also the transferable skills, and especially in a time where we are, having those transferable skills, and we're not necessarily just talking about communication or listening skills or stuff like that. It's also that, okay, someone can do this. Can that be transferred into a different area? Or can there be the training that's put in place to help bring that person? Because if they're coming with the right attitude, and that's something you can't teach, it's something that's so important to not overlook, and not just also, and I think it comes down to the CV, and that's why we're guided by our employers in terms of what exactly they want, but just presenting a CV gives an isolated snapshot, a picture. It doesn't tell you about the candidate. It doesn't give you a sense of feeling of the candidate. It just is words on a page. So that's why we get video introductions and supporting. We give our supporting benchmark scores and other things like that to give a more well-rounded view of a candidate to the employer, because I could show them two candidates, and this candidate has, oh, all of these perfect things. And then this other candidate has, as I say, 80%. But actually, the way that the first candidate, who was a perfect fit, was during the interview, they couldn't care less. They've taken ages to come back to me. This other candidate got everything back to me within 2 hours. They were really engaged, asking lots of questions, wanting to know more about the company. Who would I recommend? Well, again, every circumstance is different. But it's being open-minded. I think that is the biggest thing that I say to employers, or my team says to employers, is that, can you consider other options? Will you consider this? By having more options on the table, there is a higher chance of success. And at the end of the day, the reason you've come to us is for our expertise, our suggestions, our network, our connections, and us being able to find you a person. The more closed-minded you are across the variables of experience, location, skill set, the less chance of success. And if you really need someone, excuse me, in post for your business, then you've got to be more open-minded.
I'd certainly... It probably comes down to mathematics. And if you look at our CEO, Chris, for example, and the work he did previously, there's probably very few people in the world that could do what he was empowered to do and capable of doing. Funding for, like, the Channel Tunnel, which is like, you couldn't even get to like the starting point of something like that unless you were like, you were massively experienced and you knew exactly what you need to know exactly what you're doing from start to finish. Very few people in the world were capable of doing what he was successfully knocking out. But then minimal in terms of those job positions. And you go, and it's right, you look at an employer needs to probably know before they start down the process of the mathematics. If you want us to rigidly stick to your job description and the exact qualifications, experience, everything detailed that you want, bear in mind where we are globally with skill shortages, then the people that we're going to put forward into the client zones is probably going to be at X, for example, 30 people, something like that. Now, if you broaden this, so it's, bear in mind, and this is where probably I don't, probably because my area is more logic-based, it is logic-based, technical, that not understanding the mindset probably is this, you may as well go with the broad, so take advice from the recruitment specialists in certain areas where there is shortage, and the shortages exist everywhere near enough, and go more broader and just see who gets pushed forward, because you're not hiring in the first instance, you're collating people into your own bespoke client zones to then make your decision, and then you might be like, wow, I'm really impressed with this person mm-hmm. like my son, this person really impresses me. He shouldn't actually be in here because he's only got 2 years experience, and we specifically say we want 5. And
exactly.
So they may as well go broad, and this is probably where our specialists, they've got to be more probably forceful and explaining it better to the clients of, we're not going to hire, we're just going to collate people into your client zone for you to decide. And then they may have their eyes open, probably some do have their eyes open, and maybe some don't, you know, maybe they just preconceived, or maybe they're happy to go with whatever. It's probably
it's case by case basis.
Yeah, so I'd like to move on to our final discussion point, which
there was one other point on what I wanted to say, which actually then I do think leads us on to the next thing, was a highlight for me, obviously because I'm seeing and I'm involved in the work that is contributing to it alongside yourself, Pete, is the visibility of everything with regards to the business. Now, jobs being one thing, and it's fantastic to see that our job board is being visible and our adverts are, and you touched on before that we're not using ad spend or things like that, that the visibility that our job board is getting in the marketplace, and that they're finding their position above major job boards is fantastic. And it's crazy to think for a relatively small team what we've managed to achieve. So credit goes to you guys in the technical aspect, and obviously some of the work that we do together to get there, and not only the job board but also other pages, of which I can't remember exactly which page it was, Pete, so you'll have to interject, about the performance of the world map, the visibility in search, and the also now being in featured snippets. So I couldn't quite remember which page it was.
Yeah, we have quite a few, and it changes and grows. You can drop on and off that roundabout very quickly, and or stay on there. And it's probably got something like 3% of the structured pages are appearing as featured ads in Google, which is insane. We even have job adverts, which are picked up at the top of Google in their featured snippets. The AI summary attached, which is also fantastic, and leads to strong conversion, the element of all this, which is very complicated, and we could probably discuss, have a whole podcast on this particular area, and I've touched on it in previous episodes is the fact that when a job board starts off, so let's say Total Jobs or anything like that, whatever, I don't know what most of them are called, I don't take that much notice in what other people are doing, but they build their platform generally for the marketplace at that particular moment in time. And a lot depend initially on Google visibility, less so ad spend once they get rocking and rolling, but then as the visibility starts to wane, then the ad spend has to increase and increase, and in the end you've got no visibility organically and everything's via digital ads. The problem being is the way the whole online space, in particular search, is evolving, and the lack of flexibility for something once it's built to change, and the benefit to this system that Skills Provision utilise, and this will become very powerful. I'll touch on it now because I was going to touch on it in the next section. In Post a Job, is we're going to open our international job board up to employers to come in to post jobs, but it will not be as a traditional job board system. It will look similar, but when it comes to the production of the adverts, it will be completely different, because it's the end point. Now, if you want to give a basic summary of this, or to attempt to, if you want something to be visible on search, so let's say A&E engineering need 5 transmission linesmen for a task in the Netherlands, and they produce an advert on a job board. Now, the elements of that will be, how powerful is the job board itself that you're posting onto, the visibility, and how strong does search, because the job board won't pay for individual ad space advertising for your position, that much is almost certain, and these are some of these job boards have got hundreds of thousands of entries in there at any one time. How does it perform? How does it rank? How visible is it? Now, all of this comes down to the construction of how it's made in the first place. I took a job description or an advert from somewhere else, changed a few lines, copied and pasted, or an advert that we previously used lots and lots of times, and just pasted it in. So it's duplicate content, it's bot-derived content, it's low-scoring content. I pasted it in there. We only got 3 applicants. Why has anyone saw the ad? So what we do is it's almost like we have a technically strong SEO-derived job board where we don't follow the status quo. We generate very powerful ads. Now, the downside to that is it can take a bit of time. But that's nothing compared to when you're generating 500 applicants for 3 positions you want to fill, and out of those 30 are absolutely fantastic, so you can actually employ them later or different projects or keep in contact with them. It's like, this is absolutely gold dust online. This is what we're going to produce, and this is what but it's all based around almost like the university student that's just ChatGPT in their project and getting away with it, and someone that handballed everything, learnt it all, did it all perfectly as they were supposed to. Who's going to be the best person down the road with the knowledge, the skill, all this? So it's almost like there's always a price to be paid for taking shortcuts. You can get quick wins, of course. I mean, the online's all about quick wins for most people. But longevity, and this all comes down to the employment network as well, if you do it well and do it right, and there's quality attached to it from the very start, title of the advert, the title of the supplementary video, to the main body, to the syndication outlets, the whole thing, then if done well, a relatively small, obscure, minute organization can outrank Total Jobs, Hayes, Reed, Adecco, Glassdoor, and you know, Indeed, I don't say Indeed, you can, all of them, by purely using strong fundamentals that, and some of them are not known, so some of them are it's specific skills that my team have, that we can produce this, and it's online, it is crazy powerful that we can produce pages on, funnily enough, because I've mentioned it throughout this podcast, Peru, and then have pages for multiple keywords related, strong keywords, and we're in the top 1, 2, 3 of Google, is because we're not cheating. We're doing everything correctly and
cleanly.
With the downside of it takes time. That's the
yes. Yeah. No.
Not sure if that answered your question.
No, I think it's just a good illustration for people that the reasoning and justification behind why certain actions are positive and other actions that carried out by others are not. I think that was a good
idea. I guess the downside to my own and a few people I work with methodology and thought process is it took time to the people that were taking the shortcuts, the copy and paste brigade, the bots, dwellers and all this kind of stuff, they were winning for a long time, for years. They were winning. The copy of the job description and whack it out there and all this kind of, they were well ahead. And people like me and my team were struggling because we were doing it correctly, but it was slow. The results we were producing were good, on par with the Chiefs, but the belief was that the involvement of search primarily would favour us, because in the end they would need to follow the quality guideline for their own benefit. It's also twin to their own pay-per-click systems themselves. So a strong belief in where it was going to end up, so a predictive type assessment, which took years to unravel, and now it's absolutely perfect, where their own analytics are like imploding because they're now having to charge for so many different things where, they haven't got the visit. At one time, Indeed, we're getting as strong as Google. Now they're not featuring on page one for millions and millions of keywords. Why? It's almost like because the game's over for them as a business. They'll just have to take their licks and take the money they've made and off they go. And it's happened so many times. Yell were the same with their business directory, and there's been so many Academy, prior to LinkedIn and all this kind of stuff, where it's almost like you're riding the crest of the wave that's there at that particular moment in time. But when it ends, there's nothing there. It's like you can't do anything, and we're not playing that game. Job boards now will be dependent on the pay per click. That's it. The digital ads that they're probably having to spend for the whole board, as the sections within the board, the small boxes within a job board, which could be 10,000, 5,000, that kind of number. They're having to digital ad spend on those to bring the whole strength of it in, mm-hmm. to generate the business, But then what happens, and you'll know yourself, is once you've made a post on, say, Twitter, 2 days later, like, no one can see it's gone. Like, so it's the relevance is there.
I'd say the volume of content that goes out now and how quickly stuff gets moved through is crazy.
Yeah, and if you can produce, you imagine, like, if Total Jobs, Indeed, Glassdoor, not too bad, actually, they're different. Hayes, Reed, if they could turn the clock back, produce job boards that were powerful, technically prolific in strength, where they were generating feature snippets for their ads, they'd be like, we're unbeatable, because everyone's going to come to them, you know what I mean? And this is where, like, if you can dominate the top of search through clean ways, how can you be beaten? Because those behind you, they've never been clean. They've only ever done use shortcuts, scraping, bots. It's like, they're not going to start. Well, and even if they did, it's like, they can't, because they've infected themselves too much. It's a very fascinating subject, one that people may out there may be grasping, may not be, or maybe just waffling the same technical stuff where I waffle to my own team, but I can validate the results. We'll probably do that on one of the podcasts, Francesca, where we'll generate 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 sets of keywords, and people can type them into the computers and see for themselves. And that it's factually the case where we are dominating search in the employment sphere.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And so this area now, we're talking about future things. So we've touched on post a job. Other areas that we're looking to expand, or other ways. Something else you've kind of touched on is within our country pages, of adding additional information and potentially additional services. So looking for providers perhaps of other employment related activities. So that could be English language courses, qualifications, other qualification courses, qualification assessments. What's the right word I'm looking for? A testing of qualifications or verification of qualifications, reference checking, visas, work permits, flights, I don't know, maybe even that when it comes down to, or accommodation people, or various other things that it could be to do when it comes to employment. That was one other area that I was wanting to just note in terms of other areas of things that we're looking to expand upon. And I also think the further utilization of video in the engagement of people, because what you're saying about how, like, Twitter moves through so quickly, and is that the way that in which people consume content, us using video adverts to further support, is just another way that, not to say no one's doing it, but I don't see so much of people doing it at the scale at which we're doing it.
They're not. We have a totally unique way of operating that, one, is suited to us, because that's like what the way the fundamentals have been put in place. And two, it's probably not suited to other people, because they have a totally different way of doing it, and the numbers they're working on and all this kind of stuff. So it's unique to us. I've got a list here of, if you touched on, you've stole a few of them, I would say, Francesca, but I'll go through my list of future and discounting post a job, which was at the top, which is coming soon before Christmas. Got the international directory courses, targeted job seeker support. We've got a new profile system going live this weekend, which we've not discussed, but we'll probably do a podcast specifically on that in the coming weeks. Profile integration. That's a massive one that I don't discuss with anyone, really. International discussion forums, we've touched on that, which won't become a bum fight, and any kind of social hee-ha where we can start generating our own spam on a global scale, job applications via QR, more countries covered, and international advertising opportunities, which we're also going to move into, which won't be paid links or anything like that, but fantastic opportunity for businesses out there to expand their global reach while utilizing our very strong profile job structured pages. So there we go. That's the end of my list. And
I was going to say, I don't think I've got anything else to add now without giving too much away, and also see how things progress, because that's our list at the moment, but we know how quickly things can change, don't we, Pete? So,
things, obviously, that have not been covered on the list for obvious reasons. So.
Absolutely. And that's why I would advise anyone who is listening that wants to know more about the journey, make sure you're subscribing, liking, sharing the podcast with those that you think could be interested. And once again, just wanted to take this opportunity to remind employers out there, if you are struggling with your search for suitable manpower for your business, do not hesitate to get in contact. One of the recruitment team will be happy to process your inquiry, explain exactly how skills provision can support your business through a demonstration. So you can book into that today by visiting either the homepage and going into the inquiry section, or going to the employer section, reading a bit more about us, and then placing an inquiry from one of the pages there. Equally, if you're a job seeker and you're wanting to apply for any of our positions, please do visit our job board and register to apply. And as Pete touched on, if you're wanting to create a profile and have your skill set seen, those new changes are coming live soon. So perfect opportunity to create what we call, and I don't want to make this to do a disservice, so Pete, to tell me if I am, but we think it's a really nice shop window for job seekers to be able to showcase their skills professionally to onlooking employers globally, as we do get a lot of inquiries specifically about profiles that have been found. So your skill sets will be seen. So from my side, Francesca, it's thank you. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, and from me, Pete, and Willow, who's now decided to wake up and he's now clambering all over me. It's have a nice day. Thank you very much for listening.
Take care, everyone.